Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night to you and all that kind of stuff. It is Thursday, the 28th of February. Yeah, March even. 28th of February, or is it March? Let me just stop that little music there. Hi, welcome to the show. Yeah, Thursday, the 28th of March. Very, very windy where I am. It's just gone 8 p.m. Has it gone 8 p.m.? Yeah, it has. Just gone 8 p.m. in the UK, 4 p.m. For listeners in the US. This is our last week at 4 p.m. because the clocks go forward. This is Paul English Live. Welcome to the show. Been a wonderful wacky week down here by the seaside. What do they say about spring? In like a lamb, out like a lion, or is it in like a lion, out like a lamb? It's certainly going out like a lion down here. And I'm joined again tonight, back again wonderfully. With Dennis Wise, who's going to be with us for the next couple of hours, talking about, well, things. With some chopped juice. I hope you are too. You might need it. And I've also managed to just about get rid of my snivelling, wretched cold from last week. That was fun. The house band. Do you like the house band? I think they're pretty good. They're all right, those guys. I haven't told anybody who they are. You'll have to guess, really. Maybe I'll set up a competition for it. Who is that band? All I can tell you is that particular track is not available on Spotify, so I'll just keep it a mystery for as long as I possibly can. Welcome back to the show. We've got a few things lined up for tonight. Whether we actually get round to covering them all, I don't really know. 2 hours seems to last about sort of 25 minutes these days. And I was thinking, also a week. It's a week since we did the last episode with the second part with Thomas Anderson. That was a lot of fun, particularly looking at things like seconds and all that kind of stuff. That was quite a chunky sort of thing. And today is probably going to be reasonably chunky as well. But I'm thinking that a week now lasts about as long as a weekend. Anyway, welcome to the show. You listen to Paul English Live here on WBN 324. We're here every Thursday at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. UK. There's sometimes an after show that runs on Rumble. So if you're into Rumble, if you like rumbling, if you want to chat, most of the chat takes place on the Rumble channel over there. And as I said there at the beginning, it's just gone 4 p.m. US East Coast time. But this weekend, at last, at long bloody last, the Brits catch up. And we're putting our clocks forward this coming Saturday evening. So next week's show will still be 8 p.m. UK, obviously, but 3 p.m. US Eastern time. So we get back to where we should always be, I think. And as I mentioned before, silly that they do it in the first place, and even sillier the US does it 3 weeks before us, and I think a week after us. So if you're in the US, you get a whole 1 month's extra, whatever that might mean, of so-called summertime. All complete madness anyway. Fantastic. And when it comes to another little personal oddity thing that happened around here the other day, when was it? I think it was even last night. So It was blowing a hooli. There was a lot of rain. It was a very grim sort of evening. In fact, the last week has been more like wintry weather than like spring weather. Spring's often like that. You can sort of see, it is over here anyway, you can see sort of every weather condition in about 2 hours. If you stand on one street corner, blazing sunshine, gets warm for a bit, then you get a bit of hail, seriously, and stuff like that. Now, get this. We couldn't make out exactly what bird this was, but on my next door neighbour's house last night, about 6:30, this is fascinating, isn't it? About 6:30, as the sun was going down and as the grey clouds made it even greyer and more English-like, there was the most enormous bird on the roof of my neighbour, about 30 yards away. I didn't spot it. My eagle-eyed, it wasn't an eagle, by the way, but my eagle-eyed son said, "Hey, Dad, come and look at this." And unfortunately, it was a bit too gloomy to make out what it was, but it was either, this is going to sound bizarre, it was either a heron or a crane. Answers on a postcard, please. I'm serious, this thing must have been 3 feet high at least. It was stood on this roof, and it made for a very surreal sort of image. Rain coming down, not so bad. Of course, my heart went out to the poor little thing. I thought, there you are, you know, sort of bird on stilts hovering around, but probably better up there than on the ground where the foxes would have had it. So there you go. My wildlife reporting skills are coming into the whole thing. Right, over to our guest. Dennis, hello, good evening, and welcome to the show. How are you this fine, wonderful night, I suppose, wherever you are?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a wonderful night, but yeah, it's typical English, doable.
It is. I mean, it is. We like to talk about the weather a lot, don't we? Because we should talk about the weather a lot, I think. But it has been pretty grim here. A lot of rain today, a lot of wind. Took my wife out for a walk along the seafront, nearly blew her over. Which is not surprising, considering she's quite frail at times. But that was pretty good. Since you were here, normally we've had you on round about one. You've been back here about once a month, but of course we got delayed because that German the other week mucking about, you know, causing us to have two shows with him, which was fun actually. They were okay.
It's fine.
Yeah, no.
Give me
a
break.
Yeah, but what have you been up to then this last month? Have you been up to anything interesting? Got any new projects on the go? What's running through your head at the moment?
Well, I wouldn't say new projects, but I do get sent quite a number of videos,
yes,
and documentaries to watch, which is pretty time consuming, the number I get. And obviously I find some subjects myself which, yep, interest me, which I take time to watch. And then amidst all that, I've suddenly gone into a bit of a thing about Stephen King movies, so that,
what,
ties me up as well at times.
Now, what you mean? You're sat around. What, you can't be. You don't mean you're just sitting around watching them, is it? That you're watching them for something else, or you are just watching them?
No, I'm just watching them. I'm just fascinated how someone's brain can work so deep and dark.
It's very dark. I mean, he's a bit of an oddball, I think. but then, you know, you can't really argue. You can't really argue with his success. It's he's almost like a sort of 19th century American folk tale teller revved up for the, well, obviously, when was his big period as a book writer? It'd be late 70s and the 80s, wouldn't it? And into the, I mean, he's probably still going strong now. I haven't.
Yeah, it probably is. But I mean, he has done films like Shawshank Redemption, you know, which is not quite as dark. And The Green Mile's another one which he did.
Yeah, I think they were short stories, weren't they? They were.
Well, I think most of them are, aren't they, I think?
Yeah, well, those two were. I mean, they're really fantastic films, actually. They've got a terrible and engaging atmosphere about them both. And in fact, I've seen them both, but my sons have only seen the first one, Shawshank Redemption. We watched that maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And of course, the good thing with King, I suppose, despite his really rather odd political views, in my view, his oddity, but is that he's just a natural storyteller, isn't he? I mean, he understands,
yeah, well,
storytelling.
For those people who may not know, that Morgan Freeman, who was starring in Shawshank Redemption, that was actually originally for an Irish guy, the part,
was it?
You know, in the book.
Yeah.
Or the story, shall I say. Yeah, it was an Irish guy, but of course, Walk Hollywood came along and decided Morgan Freeman should appear.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Of course, I think that role kind of made Morgan Freeman, didn't it? Because he gets,
I think it did, yeah.
It did. He got to use it. Yeah. Because he was the narrator, everybody got very comfortable with his voice, which is a good narration voice. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. The ironic thing about him is he usually narrates as God. But it's opened up several times. He doesn't believe in God. So.
Hello. We need someone to play God. Call up Morgan Freeman.
Or Mustard.
Yeah. What, again? I've got to play God again. Yeah, yeah. Do. God the series, or whatever.
We can't get nobody else to do it like you.
No. Well, I don't know about that. There was a guy, you know, I've forgotten his name, which is terrible, but it just jumped into my mind, who narrated the whole of the Bible back in the 60s. American guy. Actually, he had a kind of mid-Atlantic twang. I can't remember his name now. And it's he's got a fantastic tone for that sort of thing. I've heard some of it. He tends to sort of, for me, he reads it a little bit too quickly. But he's pretty good at that, you know, sort of thing, tapping into the epic nature of all those sorts of things. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've been looking at a few of Trey Smith's videos as well. He goes back into Genesis and the fallen angels and all that. That's really, really interesting.
Yes. Trey Smith, you say?
Yes.
Okay, so who's Trey Smith? Go on. I think I've seen the T-R-E-Y. I think I've seen the name.
Yeah, he's kind of very, you know, he's an action type of narrator, like that. He's quite demonstrative when he's talking about the angels and the, you know, Noah stories from the Bible. But he's really informative and he kind of scorns the intelligent scientists and, you know, going about the, you know, the Big Bang and all that. And he really goes to town on them, which is really pleasant to hear.
Yeah, I think I'll be with you on that one. I mean, because, you know, they get very, very sort of quite on their big horse about all that. But the Big Bang explains everything. No, it doesn't. What came before the Big Bang?
Well, it's the biggest conspiracy going, isn't it? Because to get something from nothing...
Yeah,
can't get a bigger conspiracy, can you, really?
No. Well, I mean, yeah, it's... How much study do you want to put into these things? I mean, one of the things symbolically, of course, is that light can only come out of the darkness. So the darkness must have been here first, right? Or maybe not. And then what is darkness? Well, is it just the absence of light, you know?
According to these guys, that they can tell you what's going on 200 billion years ago. So,
yeah. That's good, but they can't tell you what happened 3 minutes ago, truthfully, can they?
Exactly.
Let's talk about this stuff in the past that literally, even if you knew it all, there's nothing you could do about it anyway, and it's completely pointless you knowing it, but let's spend a lot of time talking about that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this thing over in CERN, I heard some clips somewhere yesterday. I mean, I ain't got time to track all the things that keep rolling into my ears. You're possibly the same. But maybe it was on Jeff Rentz, actually, because I do sort of catch that in the morning. It's my sort of cup of coffee or cup of tea listen as I'm sort of bumbling along and, you know, trying to find my trousers and things like that. And she was talking about having gone there and what a dark... rather oppressive and utterly sort of evil place it feels like. I mean, they're mucking about with something over there, aren't they? It seems to me, because they...
The story is that they're, you know, it's like a gateway in it to another dimension.
Yep.
So nice. Which wouldn't surprise you, because Hollywood's made several movies on that kind of theme, haven't they, over the years?
Yeah, they have.
Predictive programming.
Yep.
But why mess around with some? Well, maybe they do know what's on the other side. But it's like, you know, why mess around with some what might not necessarily be friendly? You know?
I guess. Maybe it's just another deception, Dennis. Maybe it's actually really lovely, this gateway. They find out it just leads to a big happy valley full of people. And they go, no, this is no good. We need something to scare the pants off of people.
Well, yeah, could well be.
It's almost not possible to know exactly what their motives are all the time.
I'm of the opinion that, you know, these aliens and UFOs, etc., do come from not outer space, but inner space, another dimension. And actually, they are demons. That's my humble opinion after looking at all the evidence.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's an interesting word, demon. I don't know what the root of it is. I don't have anything in front of me to actually tell you what the root of it is.
No, it won't be pleasant.
No, probably not. Probably not. Now, before, when we were having a chat a little bit earlier, we were talking, weren't we, about what we should talk about. I can't think of anything now. No, there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things. I just wanted to tell everybody about my crane or the heron, and we were hoping it would come back. It was, in fact, we looked up cranes. You think, what's a crane doing on that? But there are sort of wildlife bird reserves around it. It was very surreal. It really was. It was like sort of some mythical creature had arrived on, because you can only see it half through the gloom, but it was moving around a bit. But apparently a crane, if it arrives...
Very Stephen King-like.
Yeah, there you go. It was. We were all looking around, waiting for an owl to hoot in the copse. Yeah, and the squealing of foxes and everything's all kicking off. I'm going, ooh, by heck. But apparently a crane, when it arrives... apparently it's a good omen. It means long life. Of course, under present circumstances, I don't know really whether everybody's really targeting long life. What, like this? Are you kidding me? So, of course, we've got to sort things out. But yeah, it's a positive omen, something like that. I'm going to play a clip now, Dennis, just to move it. We were talking a bit, weren't we, about the state of this nation. And when I say this...
England, pardon? Has fallen. It's fallen.
Well,
The Trojan horse has been in place for 300 years.
I know. Anyway, but apparently the Conservatives have... a lot of people will have already heard this because they've been doing the rounds over the last 5 or 6 days, but it's very good. This is a broadcast, a communication from the Conservative Party. I hope you haven't heard it before, and other leaders, but this is fun. Listen to this, if you can.
For 200 years, the Conservative and Unionist Party of the United Kingdom has bravely and consistently... betrayed not only its own voter base, but all native peoples of the British Isles. From constitutional reforms to dissolving the British Empire, from desecration of tradition to importing endless migrants, it is the Conservative Party that has been on the forefront of the destruction of this ancient people and their lands. I am immensely proud of what we have managed to achieve as a party, taking the greatest empire to ever span the face of the earth to being a pathetic, miserable, and broken nation mocked the world over. In recent years, we have greatly accelerated our plans to crush the ethnic Britons, making sure we openly show our hatred to you at every turn. And let me be clear, we do hate you. We despise you. We have not done enough, though. Despite all of our betrayal, our blatant loathing of you, you still vote for us. Even as we refuse to simply deliver a referendum, and then when we do, we subvert your wishes by then opening our borders to the world, even as we take all of your wealth and make the promised public services completely unusable, there are still some of you who vote for us. It is you, our voters, who we find the most disgusting. To combat this, I am incredibly proud to introduce our new policy, Zero Seats. Zero Seats is the policy where we shall do everything possible to make sure at the next general election, we as a party obtain zero seats. You will have already seen zero seats in action, such as arguing over how much of your money to send to foreign conflicts that are nothing to do with you, or straight up making you homeless as we lavishly treat foreign peoples and hand over your property to them, and then criminally punishing you if you so much as point any of this out. So please, when you think about the next election, think zero seats. If we all play our part, we can finally make zero seats a reality.
Hey, maybe they're worth voting for after all, Dennis. What do you think?
Even I can tell that's AI.
Of course. Of course. Absolutely. It speaks better than he does, actually, doesn't it, really?
Sounded like Blair, to be honest.
Did it at first? Yeah, I guess so. They're both slightly overly enunciating everything in a little bit delicate voices, aren't they? Not like us Northerners, gruff all the time. But
a bit effeminate, yeah.
Yeah. I quite like that because I've thought for some time... having these honest political communications might help. I mean, I could be completely wrong. Maybe people who have already got their head in the sand have just stuck it in even further hearing things like that. Just to let you know, that wasn't a genuine, I'm sure everybody gets this, but, you know, by way of public information service, that wasn't an actual genuine conservative communication. But the content was pretty close to the truth, it seems to me.
Oh, bang on.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I can't believe people still vote. I really can't. I know a lot of people woke up, you know, with the COVID thing, but no, I can't believe people even bother to vote because that ain't going to change anything. And marching in the streets don't change anything.
No. Vote harder, Dennis. Isn't that the slogan? Really get some big heavyweight voting in. That's what I'm doing some press-ups, and I'm going to really mark my voting card very heavily. As I've mentioned, I've never voted, Dennis, ever. I mean, I don't do that.
I don't blame you. I mean, I have. I did fall for it a long, long time ago.
Oh, God.
I know.
But you should be hanging whatever you've got to hang in shame. That's just shocking. That's appalling. But I couldn't have even, I've said it before, I couldn't tell anybody why I didn't vote when I was young. But my instincts were that none of these people were actually any good at all. And this turns out to be completely 100% true. None of them, not one of them. I mean, Enoch was good. Maybe there's a couple of people. Like I said, I played that clip the other week. I don't know if you caught it. Liz Truss, now that she's out of power, actually telling the truth about who's got more control, i.e. the Bank of England. She literally said that. He said, you know, we can't sack the governor of the Bank of England, but the Prime Minister can be sacked. And Liz, yeah, but she's the, I mean, maybe I'm over egging the custard with it, but she's the only sort of ex-Prime Minister that's even come even close to telling anything true. Yeah,
you know? Don't you think they have now got an air of arrogance where they can openly speak about these things, knowing that things can't be done to stop it?
Well, I think things can be done. I just don't think we're thinking in the right ways to know exactly what to do.
Well, we're not organised enough to stop it, are we? Or even are we powerful enough? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it all depends how you design, how we want to determine what power is. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, when you were on last time, you mentioned soft communism. And yeah. I was thinking about the word soft in regards to all of many of the topics that we discussed, particularly, you know, this control of power. And the soft power is the more lethal of the types, really, because this is the one that's worn people down. Yeah. Yeah. It's worn them down. And so when we're trying to, you know, set people on fire internally with some kind of passion or interest in their own life, and I have to work on myself with that as well. It's an ongoing thing that we've all got to keep doing. You can see that this soft cushioning effect that's taken place, particularly since 1945 around here and in most of the Western countries, has been staggeringly effective at sort of robbing people of their will to determine how their life turns out. So everybody's now hypnotized by the economy, by a war that they're just making up. They're just manufacturing a war out of thin air. And there's literally no reason to have a war with anybody at all. None of these things, there's any plausible or sensible, coherent reason to do any of them. But because these are the only things that are spoken about on the mainstream media, everybody's agenda in their own head is either, are you for it or against it? Well, I'm actually for something else completely, to be quite honest. That's me personally.
Well, to be honest, if you want my humble opinion, the only way things will change is you've got to look to America. Because America, if America falls, the world falls. Mm-hmm. What America needs is not an election, it's not a president, it's a dictator. A dictator who is probably high up in the army with enough power to galvanise an army or part of the army to be able to take over and then arrest things.
Yes.
That's the only way they're going to solve it. Only way they're going to solve it. Trump ain't going to do it. Biden ain't going to do it.
No.
Just a dictator.
Yep.
But whether if that's going to ever happen, you know.
I know. Well, they keep rolling out the word Nazi as fast as they possibly can now. It's obviously losing its weight, so they have to say it 1,000 times a day now. You know, Nazi, Nazi, yeah, okay, you know, it's just got ridiculous. And it was always pretty ridiculous to start off with. Hey, I've got, let me, just following on about that migrant stuff, and I mentioned this to you before. I don't know whether I've played this before in the show recently, because I've had it around for a couple of weeks. I might have, but it's definitely worth another rerun. This is an old soak. A soak is an English term for a man that is not permanently drunk, but is nearly permanently drunk, if you know what I mean. He's just topped up. So he's sort of semi-coherent, but he's a soak, basically. From Great Yarmouth. Listen, this is that party political broadcast as communicated genuinely by a man in the street in Great Yarmouth.
Bornear, yeah.
What's no, huh?
What's life like in Great Yarmouth these days?
Shithole.
Shithole?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Those are all our Mongolians and every bloody thing.
Jesus.
They're all on social security, they're all...
No good.
No.
Has it got worse as time's gone on?
I pay my council tax. Bollocks to that council.
You're not happy?
No, I'm not. That's Yarmouth's a shithole.
Okay, has it got worse?
Absolutely.
So when did it start going downhill?
After the war, we had Italians. Great people. We had ice cream. We had the Greeks. Restaurant Yarmouth was great. Now... I'm born here. I live round there. God, the dustbins are full. Nobody know what they're doing.
It looks a bit dishevelled, a bit
it's
in decline.
It's a shithole, Yarmouth is.
Okay, mate.
And I've got to pay my council tax.
Stop paying it. See what they do.
I know.
Just stop paying
I'll tell you what. Why can't they pull these town and house and soil them singers in the bloody town hall?
Maybe if I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Idea. Have a good day.
Elect that man. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, he's always saying what everybody knows, is really. Like I said, England's fallen, not just where he is.
Well, yeah, I can't accept too much of that defeatist talk around here, Dennis. Even though
it's
even
fallen,
if
he, I've told you.
Well, I guess it all depends which bit you think it has. Maybe it's got to fall completely for any chance of it being restored. And people have got
well,
to
Wales
get...
has fallen because you can only drive 20 miles an hour around there. London's fallen because Khan's in charge and his ULED cameras. And the rest of Britain's just neglected. I mean, Scotland's fallen with that cranky woman.
Yes.
You know, she wrecked Scotland, so there isn't much left then, is there?
It's an odd situation where huge numbers of people, us, are being dominated by a bunch of pack animals who, frankly, are not that bright and are definitely under the control of something else. And that something else that's controlling them obviously must have a great deal of SH1T on them. It just must. I can't.
Of course. Yeah,
One of the things that the media never observe this, because they can't, because they're completely gone. We don't really have a media that can communicate anything of any value to us. I mean, I know I'm only stating the bleeding obvious here, but it's never pointed out that there is never one coherent, energized, dissenting voice against this that comes out of any orifice of any politician at all. Nothing.
Well, they're all compromised.
All of them.
That's the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're all mediocre. They're all in love with themselves. They love the power that they've got, which is unearned. They like being in charge of things. They haven't a clue what to do about a thing, and they don't care. And I'm not actually expecting them to care. I mean, these sorts of character types don't have that as a quality inside of them. They're only really caring. I know it's an old cliche, but it's true. They're only really caring about themselves. But I think the main thing would be that if pushback comes and starts to pick up speed, they are naturally anxious about the filth and dirt that they've been involved in, possibly coming to light in front of the eyes and ears and hearts of a mobilised, motivated population. And that's we still have to work on that, because I think although we look at it, say, as the big picture in terms of political structures or the world situation, I tend to really look at this in terms of my street and the people that I meet. And if we can work, and I try to all the time, I'm always attempting to communicate with people about anything, you know, to pull people out of a particular rut and to get them possibly, you know, would you mind awfully being interested in the outcome of your own life? What do you think of it as an idea? You know, and it's trying to move like through.
I'll ask you a question.
Yeah.
If say, I don't know the, you know, percentage, but just say when COVID was around and 80% of the nation wore masks. If tomorrow the government came out and said, we must all wear masks again, what percentage do you think would still wear masks?
maybe 70%. I think there'd be a slight...
Therein lies your problem. Lies your problem.
I think so. It does. It does. But hasn't it always ever been thus? Is it just the case, maybe, that in the past, because there was still a racial coherence to the nation, which there can be, a nation can't be racially incoherent because it's not a nation then, that although we obviously had crooked politicians going back into the 19th and the 18th centuries, yes, they existed back then, their ability to actually wreak havoc was massively less than what it is right now. This sort of, the organisation of the system through electronic control systems and blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah, means that any old goofball, and that's unfortunately what we're burdened with, can now be manipulated into a position of wrecking things on a much larger scale than they ever could. So it's this sense that no one is literally speaking for us. I mean, you are. You speak for us. I seek to speak for us. Many of the listeners here will seek to speak for us. But we've got to overcome certain sort of, I think, barriers in one-to-one communication. You know, when that person that you're talking to starts to shrivel a bit, you can see them and they're reaching for their mask. Don't put it on, sir. It's very silly.
Well,
you know,
people can see in my third documentary, The Secret Masonic Victory of World War II, where all this began.
Yeah.
You know, like people can see this on, you know, the website monetarypublishing.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a documentary, the third of three, which explains where all this began and where it's taken us. You know, so there is a power behind the government. The government does what it's told.
Yeah.
And, you know, us ordinary people are outnumbered by our own normies.
That's the biggie, isn't it? That really is. That is the big concern. That really is the big concern. I think maybe when you were on before, I know I've certainly mentioned this many times, that, and as you were talking there about the people wearing masks, you know, it was when I saw how many people were rapidly complying with insane directions, how many people don't have an internal navigation system for themselves. They haven't got one. That's the bit that's truly chilling. That's the Stephen King horror novel, Dennis. That's the one.
Exactly.
It really is that. It's The Fog, which he didn't write. That was written by some other guy. But it's the fog that's in people's heads. And this sort of mental torpor. Are there ways through it? I think, is this new? I don't think it is new. I think, I have to operate on the basis, I tend to, that human nature has never changed. It never does. Okay, we've got more bells and whistles and complex systems, and you have to listen to these people using this modern language, which is complete guff, the whole lot of it, you know, diversity, equity, and whatever it is, and all this other inclusion, you know, all this nonsense. Diversity is our strength. It's a completely meaningless sentence, but the fact that some idiot politician said it means that it gets reported ad nauseum, and people suddenly think that there might actually be something in this, which of course there isn't. It's a ridiculous thing to say, but they keep saying these ridiculous things.
What a lot of people don't realise is all this immigration started a long, long time ago, straight after World War One in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, in the Rhine Valley, mm-hmm. what the French did, and again you can see it in the third documentary, what they did, they got the colonial black soldiers which fought for France during World War One and pushed them on the Germans in the Rhine Valley, and mm-hmm. they were armed to the teeth.
Yeah.
Took any white woman they wanted. Mm-hmm. And even the people when back in England heard, complained about it, you know, how the Germans were being treated. But this has been an agenda from, well, let's admit it, it's the Kalergi plan.
Yeah. It's probably even older than that. The idea of subjugating a people comes probably from military circles going back to Rome, predating Rome. You know, how do you, if you've defeated their army in a battle, how do you then subdue the rest of the population who, if they were to get organized, would be a major problem for you? So, I mean, what did they do? They used to put on games, circuses, bread and circuses. I'm not saying everything the Romans did was bad, but that's what, you know, they learnt these things, or they had received them from previous civilizations that had used these techniques to control and subdue people. So, we've had the ultimate bread and circus. We've had the television Holy moly, you look at that thing and you realise, I mean, the television rules, it is the, well, to paraphrase Tolkien, a lidless eye wreathed in light, blasting garbage into people's heads 24/7.
Not well, the only surprising thing about the television, you know, sorry to interrupt, but the is that they didn't give everybody a free television because it's in every household, it's the perfect propaganda machine, and yet they still charge us for it.
I know. we're the British Brainwashing Corporation. Oh, yeah. And we've set it up that's so it. That you'll be actually paying for your brainwashing. How about that? Oh, that's jolly good. Yes.
Well, you need a license to watch it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A license. You need a license to watch your own brainwashing.
Americans can't get their head around that one. I know. Americans just can't. They can't get their head around getting a license to watch TV.
No.
And I don't blame them.
Well, in its defence, which is, I'm going to come across as a knob here, but in defence of the old BBC, the idea of being able to watch television without adverts is really good. Although you could say from a governmental point of view, this is excellent because we've got full spectrum control of everything we put in front of them. And this is true. And yet, you know, I don't subscribe to the idea that, say, every university professor that's ever existed or people that advised on those great shows that they used to do, the natural history shows, the documentaries, their documentary team used to be pretty good. It wouldn't have gone into areas that you've gone into because they couldn't, but they did some good stuff. I saw one, they did one years ago. It only aired once, probably early 70s, about Russians being held in London during the tail end of World War II and how they were mercilessly returned back to Russia by the authorities who knew exactly what would happen to them and did it anyway. And it was a good documentary about that. It was rough. It was unpleasant. It was distasteful. It had that element of raw truth in it. Of course, they couldn't go to the key topics that we talk about, or at least think are allowed to think about. Actually, we're probably not even allowed to think about them soon, are we? But those topics, it didn't cover that kind of stuff, but it was excellent. And so the old stuff was good. Of course, then they did give us The World at War, which at the time was amazing because, you know, you've got Sir Larry Olivier in his braces looking like a journalist, the man of the people, reading this stuff out from behind a typewriter or whatever. But of course, in due course, we find that that's only about 30% of the story, and the other 70% twists away everything, all the elements and the sort of conditioning he was trying to instill in people. It undermines all that, you know, so... But then you already knew that.
Yeah, well, I'll cover that again as well. That was one of the biggest propaganda documentaries of the 70s. A lot of people remember that one.
Yeah, they do.
And it was bad. I mean, I covered that again in the last documentary, but God, it's bad. They were awful.
Yeah, I was bedazzled by it because I'm a young teenager, didn't know any better. And I always remember being young at that period, you know, as an infant in the 60s and a teenager in the 70s, that World War II just seemed a million years ago. It seemed so far away. And, of course, the black and white footage and the nature of the camera work seemed to date it even more. One of the things that's interesting with this AI stuff when you apply it to old movie films... you bring them to life. It's as if suddenly all of history is just immediately on your doorstep. Did you see that, you know, what's his name? Peter Jackson, the guy that did the Lord of the Rings thing. Did you see the that piece of work he did called, I think, They Shall Never Grow Old? I think that was it. It was about World War I. Did you get to see that?
No, I never saw it.
I've got a copy of it. I'll send it to you. It's astonishing. It's really an amazing bit of technical work. They got a lot of World War I footage, him and his team. They were, and it was for 2018, so the 100th anniversary of the cessation of hostilities, supposedly, certainly military ones, in Flanders and elsewhere. And they put all these clips together, and then in interviews with Jackson, he was using all this sort of computer enhancement stuff. So they were filling in all the missing frames. They got the frame rate up to whatever it is, 24 frames per second, is it these days, or 30? I don't know what it is. But they got the frame rate up to the actual standard movie rate. They then colorized it. They enhanced the sharpness of all the images. And as an absolutely amazing touch, they got lip sync actors to look at what these, in many cases, British troops were saying as they were digging these trenches. And there's a Yorkshire regiment, right? So, because you could see it, it was on their, they walked past this thing, and they're out in the field, and this bloke literally is talking like I'm talking, like that. Right, you'll get over there. And it was just, it was amazing. And it's the way it cuts. They're running, so you'll be familiar with that old black and white footage where it's jumping around and there's, you know, that kind of stuff, right? They show you three or four guys walking towards the front in its original footage, and it's hopping around a bit, you know, and that's it. It's all, you know, little Tommy Atkinson off to the war and all this kind of stuff. Then it slows down, then it sharpens up, then it goes from black and white to colour, and then the sound comes in. And I'm not kidding, it was as if someone had gone down onto the trenches with an iPhone and filmed it and put it on TikTok. It's absolutely amazing. And I just went, you go, wow, it's absolutely stunning bit of work. And Jackson has said, he said, every bit of old footage that we've got should have this treatment, as a, and it should, because it really, it brought it back in such a powerful way. And the basis for it as well was that in the 1960s, the BBC were able to record interviews with many of the last infantrymen that had fought in World War One. Because they'd have been in their 20s in the 1910s or so. They were now in their late 60s, early 70s. And many of them, of course, had suffered a lot and were dying from, you know, injuries and things. And so they did a lot of really high-quality audio recordings. And these commentaries by these guys are laid over this film. I'm going to send it to you because it's an amazing bit of work. It really is. And some of the comments from these guys were absolutely incredible. One guy said, well, I was 17 at the time. I'm paraphrasing from him. He says, I'm 17 at the time. He said, I couldn't wait to get there. He said, when we were coming up to the front, he said, I could hear it all going off. He said, I was getting more and more excited. He said, and I was really worried. He said, because I thought it might be over before I got there. He go, what? You know.
Well, you know, they can always get the first documentary, the greatest story for the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can. Well, maybe we could go and knock on the doors of the BBC and say, do you want to do it right now? What do you say? We've been paying for you all our lives. Can we actually use the budget and get it done right?
Maybe we should put mine on TV, yeah?
Dennis, I'm all for it. What do we do? Do we get a petition going, or do we march? Do we wear masks?
Well, or do we, yeah, well, you can march.
Yeah. Can I? Thanks very much for that. Anybody else want to march with me?
No,
I don't. All that stuff's a nonsense.
Maybe we should set the website, though, you know, just to make sure people know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So if you want to, and I know many listeners will know this, but I'm here with Dennis Wise, and Dennis is an auteur. He's the creator of three incredibly substantial documentaries about the 20th century, particularly. And the one he's most noted for is Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, which is a view of that conflict and that period in history from the other side, or from many other sides, bringing together material hitherto most people will not be familiar with at all. And that really is the response I get from everybody that sees it for the first time, is basically, I never knew any of this stuff. I go, no, not surprising, really. Not surprising. You know what? Dennis, now might be a good time to play this David Irving clip, which just came across my desk about 40 minutes before this show. So I'll just play it. I don't even know what he's just talking about some stuff. It's 2.5 minutes. Here we go. It might be relevant.
Churchill said to Kennedy, you watch when Adolf Hitler begins bombing London and bombing towns in Britain like Boston and Lincoln, towns with their counterparts in the United States. You Americans will have to come in, won't you? You can't just stand side aside and watch us suffering. But he knew from code breaking, he knew from reading the German Air Force signals, which we had broken on March on May the 26, 1940, that Hitler had given orders that no British town was to be bombed. London was completely embargoed. The German Air Force was allowed to bomb ports and harbours and dockyards, but not towns as such. And Churchill was greatly aggrieved by this, and he wondered how much longer Hitler could avoid carrying on war like this. But Hitler, as we know, carried on until September 1940 without bombing any English towns. The embargo stayed in force. You can see it in the German archives now, and we know from the code breaking of the German signals that Churchill was reading Hitler's orders to the German Air Force not on any account to bomb these towns. So there was no way that we could drag in the Americans that way unless we could provoke Hitler to do it. which is why on August the 25th, 1940, Churchill gave the order to the British Air Force to go and bomb Berlin. Although the chief of the Bomber Command and the chief of staff of the British Air Force warned him that if we bomb Berlin, Hitler may very well lift the embargo on bombing British towns. And Churchill just twinkled, because it was what he wanted, of course. At 9:15 that morning, he telephoned personally Bomber Command himself to order the bombing of Berlin, 100 bombers to go and bomb Berlin. They went out and bombed Berlin that night, and Hitler still didn't move. Hitler ordered another raid on Berlin, and so it went on for the next 7 or 10 days, until finally on September the 4th, Hitler lost his patience and made that famous speech in the Sport Palace in Berlin, in which he said, "This madman has bombed Berlin now 7 times. If he bombs Berlin once more, then I shall not only just attack their towns, I shall wipe them out. Werde ihre Städte ausradieren." A very famous speech. Of course, German school children are now told about the Hitler speech. They're not told about what went first. They're not told how Churchill sent out deliberately to provoke the bombing of his own capital. And on the following day, Churchill ordered Berlin bombed again. And the result was the German Air Force started bombing the docks in London, the East End of London, finally the City of London and the West End on the 6th and 7th of September 1940. And in September 1940, 7,000 Londoners were killed in the bombing as a result of Churchill's deliberate provocation. The files are there, the archives are there. No wonder Harold Macmillan didn't want my book published.
That did seem an appropriate clip in many ways, Dennis.
Certainly did. Certainly did. Well, we all know what Churchill was.
He was our Prime Minister, Dennis, and he led us to victory over the evil Germans. I read it in a newspaper, so it must be true.
Yeah, if that's what you believe.
I'm being sarcastic, cynical and disgusting all at the same time. Good question in here on the chat from EXO. For you, Dennis, this is interesting. Can Dennis tell us about some of the reactions to The Greatest Story, your epic work, from his friends and family when it was first released? What kind of reactions did he get from those people, I guess, close to you to some degree?
Close to me, most people close to me knew about it anyway. Mm-hmm. As discussed it with close friends and family over the years. So other than that, the people who saw it for the first time actually had the biggest reaction. In fact, life-changing. And even now you can go to IMDb and read the comments.
Yes.
And the 10 out of 10s far outweigh the 1 out of 10s, which were all coordinated. I don't believe that they watched the documentary at all.
No.
Certainly not all of it. But the 10 out of 10s and the reviews are stunning, absolutely stunning. It's just one of them documentaries, I think, which came just at the right time. I think people must have been ready to accept something. Probably, there's certain things happening around that time. Maybe the Trump election, I don't know. But certainly around that time, there was an appetite for truth. Maybe 9/11 was another one. But The Greatest Story Never Told, as many people say in the reviews, quote, that after watching it, it really is the greatest story ever told.
I think it really is. And it's just such a huge story. I mean, we're listening there to David Irvin. He's done an awful lot of telling about it. And I know he's physically not in great nick right now. Somebody, Eric, puts this in. He says, according to David Irvin, Mr. Hitler said in 1945, "The truth will one day be told by an Englishman." Perhaps that Englishman is you, Dennis. What do you think? Or is it David Irving? Or is it somebody else? Or is it a combination of Englishmen?
It's hard to say, but I know a lot of the reactions were when people finally took it all in. And you've got to remember, a lot of people have watched this documentary and they're actually researching while they're watching because they can't believe what they're seeing.
Yes.
And it certainly gets to a point where many, many, many people have quoted as actually, once they realised what had been lost, it actually brought them to tears. Such was the devastation of feeling when they look at today and they look at what could have been.
Yeah.
Grown men being made to cry.
Well, I was one of them, Dennis. And I often am, and I don't have a problem with it.
I'm not surprised.
It's, you know, that was major. Reading Hellstorm by Tom Goodrich had a similar effect on me. And it opened up a can of worms, which I knew was there, but it was opened up with such precision, what you did, to go into all the details of it. It's layered. You go, it's not a simple story. I mean, it is at the heart of it, but in terms of you require all that telling of it because people are dealing with a lifetime of lies. So there's so many things that shake you up. There's obviously the information directly itself that you'd hitherto had never seen. You'd never seen this before. Suddenly it's compiled in an easily accessible way. You get taken through the story. And of course, as minute after minute of it goes by, the impact is just increases as you go through it. There's that aspect of it. But the other one, of course, the hidden aspect, the one that we're dealing with and have been dealing with all our lives, but we're dealing with a lot, is the fact that your governments are your enemy and lie to you as a matter of course all the time. It's irrelevant to them whether you know the truth or not. All that's relevant is that they maintain a control over you. And it's the most horrific period of history because of that.
Yeah, this is illustrated in all three of the documentaries, which mm-hmm. we call the Trilogy of Truth, by the way.
Right.
And it starts off with the story of Adolf Hitler and the World War II.
Yeah.
And like I said, people can research it as they go along and they'll see what they will see. The second one, Communism by the Back Door, then explained the fact that communism and Western Freemasonry joined together to defeat the Germans. And so, as we talked about earlier on, this slow communism, which is, you know, based at the Fabian Society, which mm-hmm. creeps up slowly and surely. Everyone talks about it. You go on the news and they're all talking about it, you know, the migrants and all this, but nothing's ever done. More migrants are piling in. And then in the third documentary, I realised that the impact that Freemasonry has had on not just the world, but mainly in Britain, which yes. has run us for 300 years.
And, it has.
And, the Freemasonry is what people don't understand because they control left and right. So when Keir Starmer turns around and says, I'm going to do this when the Tories are out, he's only going to do exactly the same as what the Tories did when they were in.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. I mean, I was listening to Alan Watt, you know, the Scottish fellow who shuffled off this mortal coil a couple of years ago. Did you ever hear any of his work?
Sorry, who's that?
Alan Watt, not Alan Watts.
Oh, yeah. Alan Watt.
He didn't go into it precise. He didn't come to it with the framing that you do. And I think your framing is closest to the way I think about it. But Alan Watt was brilliant, really a brilliant researcher at looking at the machinations of the power structures. And he found a way of talking about them without getting into too much trouble. I think he was completely conscious of that all the way through. But I heard a clip from him he died 2022, I think it was, or was it 21? So recently there was nothing untoward about it. He just had a problem and he shuffled off this mortal coil, but he was talking about masonry. And he said pretty much what you'd said, that Britain is run by masonry and has been for a long time. And it has. I mean, what's that book by Robeson, Truth of a Conspiracy? He's talking about all of these things, you know. And if the judiciary is riddled with these creatures, which it no doubt is, this in part explains these ludicrous so-called judgments. They're nothing of the sort, of course. They're just agenda pushers as they keep nudge, 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 softly nudging, nudging, nudging us towards a precipice. It's difficult to see any other sort of coherent reason. And, you know, I'm coming back to that Kudriano quote again. If I've got the enemy in front of me and a traitor, and I view Freemasons as traitors, as simple as that, he said the traitors get it. I mean, is it not the case that with regards to the true law of these lands, which are based on and derived from and are of biblical teachings, that you don't add anything to the law, nor do you take it away? So why do we need Freemasons at all? We don't need them, do we?
Well, we don't, and it's explained completely in the Secret Masonic Victory.
Yeah. Yes. Obviously, a lot of privileges of being a member of that exclusive and elite club, Dennis. I've never been invited, so I've not even had the thrill of turning them down. Have you ever been invited to become, you know, an apron wearer?
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
Well, then again, I'm oblivious to such things, so they may well have approached me without even realising it.
Yeah.
But
I think it's not.
There's only one website, actually, not just my DVDs, but books and other DVDs on the subject, which, you know, we keep saying is at monetarypublishing.com, which is only going to be up for as long as we can fight the enemy, because the enemy are forever pushing to wipe it off the website. But some fabulous work on there, like, say, Hellstorm and some other great authors of books on there. Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a good gathering. MoneyTreePublishing.com, everyone. I'm sure you know of it. And I'll stick the link in under the video afterwards because it's important. All your work's there, isn't it? All your work's available from MoneyTree.
Yeah, I mean, I was working on another documentary at one point before I was ill, and they really take a lot out of it. You know, I mean, to do a six-hour documentary and to edit it, etc., people can't understand quite just what it does to you health-wise. And I've done, is it 3 6-hour ones now? And I was working on another one, but I was just too ill to complete it. And
understood.
I finally realised that, you know, I succumbed to nature. You can't fight Father Time.
No. No, you can't. It requires, I mean, it's the mental exhaustion of people. What's that then?
Well,
oh, that's not when you're thinking and your brain's melting because you're having to deal with all these things, you know?
When I'm researching these documentaries, I find out things which shock me, which even I didn't know about.
Yes.
And so that has an acclimative effect on you. Like, for instance, one of them, I didn't know about the revolution down in Mexico. When all religion was banned, and, you know, people were being arrested just for wearing a dog collar, and even shot.
When was that?
Yeah, that was the Cristeros. They had a revolution down in Mexico. A communist government took over, banned all religions, and a civil war started. You know, believers in Christ against the communists. Till eventually, the laws were put on the shelf, just like, you know, a lot of laws are. They can come back any time. But Mexico survived it. But like I said, you know, come back any time and we go back into the same situation. But something like that should have been normal all over the world.
It should. I mean, I know that I think South America, isn't South America where the Jesuits first trialed communism? I've forgotten which country. It was in the 1800s or maybe even earlier than that. They trialed a communistic approach, did the Jesuits, because, of course, the Jesuits aren't really...
they're not really good guys, you see.
They're not really very good.
Reputation, yeah.
They do. I mean, they are known as apparently being astonishingly good educators. I mean, and if anybody's got a copy of Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley, Quigley was educated by Jesuits and was a Jesuit. It's hard to argue with that. I mean, it's an astonishing bit of intellectual writing. I mean, it's just off the charts. And that was 1965. He was Clinton's history teacher, wasn't he, at Georgetown University, I think, Quigley.
Well, that's interesting, because I only found out the other day, like, that Oxford University, who I've always said, like, if ever I hear that word, then the red flag goes up. But I found out the other day that Oxford University is like 5 colleges. And they have, you know, you've got your elites are taught there, and they're obviously taught different to what we're taught. But like what they have in America, they have the Skull and Bones. In Oxford, they have a similar group called the Group, which, you know, you have to be initiated to go into. Very fascinating, and mirrors what goes on in America, you know, in the elite colleges in America.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's...
It seems to be a habitual
thing. It's a closed world.
Yeah, it is a closed world. And you and I are not in it, thankfully. I mean, I'm serious as well. I mean, thankfully, I wouldn't want to be in it. Shout out to Chimom or Kilmom, I think it is. The Jesuit missions in Paraguay. That's what I was thinking of, Dennis. It was Paraguay.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for that. So, yeah, down in Paraguay. Yeah, they did a lot of sort of community work, you know, that word. Because, you know, whenever sort of authorities start talking about building community, you can pretty sure what they actually mean is destroying it. The organic community that occurs in a village is what we all want. That's why I all want to live in Hobbiton with a a pub and a village green and fields. That's why we naturally want to live like that, because that is our natural undisturbed way of living. It's where wisdom can grow up naturally. But of course, power structure people are not into that at all. No, you've got to pay attention to me and my crap ideas, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. We're just at halfway. We're halfway through. We're top of the hour here. You're listening to Paul English Live here on WBN 324. We're here every Thursday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. UK, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the US today. But next week, as I've said, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. as finally our clocks go forward. I think it's time for a song, Dennis. So I'm going to play.
Which song are you going to play?
Well, do you want me to say? I'm going to play the one by Free. That's the one I'm going to play.
All right. Well, there's a bit of a story to the other one, but the reason I picked Free was because, obviously, I think the last time I was on, people realised I were a big Elvis fan. Well, yes. I also believe that Paul Rodgers, the lead singer of Free, has the best rock voice in the world.
He's very... Yeah, he's quite languid. He's got a certain range, but he does it really well. I just think he's never been in enough good bands, but I agree with you. I think you're right.
Well, he probably hasn't signed a full Sell Your Soul contract.
Yeah, you get the idea that he hasn't. He's kind of part of that little sort of group out there. He was close with the guys from Led Zeppelin. I know you've mentioned, but he was on the same record label. Or was it Bad Company, or something like that, which was one of the later bands, and they did some good stuff. This track, is this with Kossoff on guitar?
Yes.
Paul Kossoff? Yes. Yeah. He was a good guitar player. Here we go. This is Wishing Well by Free.
In the wishing well. Oh. Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil and stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome back to the second hour here, Paul English Live on Thursdays. I'm with Dennis Wise, and both of us were just banging our heads listening to Free, weren't we, Dennis? Were you banging yours?
What a voice.
It is good. It is good. It really is good. It's sort of smoky, isn't it?
He's got that soul, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done some great vocal performances. But I mean, the thing is, I just their material, the good stuff, is really good. And the rest of it is, you know. But I grew up listening to that, playing cards. This is when I'm, what, 15, 16, 17. Playing cards, couldn't get into the pub, sat in my mate's room. That's on the record player. You remember record players? We had record players, right? That, coffee, playing Risk or cards, eating a lot of ginger nuts. So that was a backing track. Well, some of us have been around a bit, Dennis, you know, so yeah, you don't remember ginger nuts. I still buy ginger nuts to this day, really. It's quite sad, isn't it? But it's the cheapest biscuit in the supermarket, and it's the one I like the most. How about that? I'm just a northern tightwad. Some habits you just never get rid of, you know. Them and fig rolls, eh? Fig rolls and Free, a fantastic voice, really a fantastic voice. So good pick there. Yeah, excellent. Where were we? Oh, yeah. We were mired in the fun and joys of Freemasonry and the history of the 20th century, weren't we?
Yes.
Yes, we were. So
I found it fascinating. I really did. I didn't realise the control that they had. I really didn't. I mean, it is like, obviously, during World War II, Hitler would destroy Freemasonry in every country he invaded. And it was, you know, a secret means of infiltrating a country, infiltrating the government, and you know, putting in the policies of Freemasonry, which has always been left-wing. You look at, you know, the French Revolution, which, again, I cover, you know, in that third documentary.
Yeah.
It's a left-wing revolution, Freemasonry behind it.
Was it French, Dennis, the French Revolution? Was it French? What do you think?
Yeah. the French Revolution. Well, what I learned the other day, I was listening to an old podcast of Diana Spingola.
Yeah.
And she actually, she cited that the American Civil War was the first Bolshevik Revolution. So, and she explained it quite eloquently, as she did. She said a lot of communists arrived in America, and all the tactics that they used, the North against the South, was typical of a Bolshevik army.
I think so. Yeah, this pattern is repeated. I mean, it's certainly in terms of the propaganda stage or the getting a hold of printing presses is a key part of the whole thing. Pamphleteering. I mean, it was rampant on the French Revolution. I don't know. I'm not familiar with to what degree it was in the US so-called Civil War, but the war between the states. Certainly in England during the English Civil War. I had a record of it somewhere. I think it's in The Nameless War by Archibald Maule Ramsay. There's a name you won't forget, even though I nearly did. He talks about something like 30,000 pamphlets. This is in the mid-1600s. To get people riled up to act and do things, you know, to become part of the designer mob that was wheeled out of the city. You know, and the French Revolution, pretty similar sort of thing. Because it took them an awful long time to get that rolling. The French actually weren't really interested. But the high-up Masonic corrupted French, they were the ones that were pushing it like mad. But whenever the fighting broke out, they always retreated pretty quickly back to their villas or wherever they were staying at the time.
Well, I've actually seen a comment in the comment on Rumble where they're saying the rituals of Freemasonry are identical to witchcraft, which they are.
Yes.
If you research that, you know what I mean? So it's a satanic secret society.
Yeah, I've got a document kicking around somewhere about the origins of Freemasonry. And of course, I don't have it to hand right now because I wasn't necessarily, but I might dig it up for when you're on again. It was to do with some meetings in some coffee houses in England in the early 1600s, before it had sort of taken a hold in the actual masonry club, as it were. Because obviously Freemasons were these masons that, you know, made these cathedrals and things like that. But in terms of the origins, they were talking about it happening about 5 years after the death of Christ. And I think it was Herod Antipater. I might have got the name wrong, so don't jump all over me. But they were massively, the power structure of the day, so it's no different. As we said, human nature never changes. It's the same thing. The form's different. You know, the technology's different, but the intent is always the same. And they were concerned at the speed with which people were becoming reinvigorated with understanding the message of Christ. His people were becoming galvanized in that way, and therefore their hold over them was diminishing rapidly. So they set up kind of a counterforce, which is the root of the Masonic subversion of organized religion. Yeah.
It's funny how you keep mentioning these items of history, which I do cover in that third documentary. Mm-hmm. Herod was possibly even before Herod, you know, there was talk of Babylon as well.
Yes.
You know, Nimrod is said to have been the first Freemason building the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is a long, long history hidden to us all.
It is. I don't have, it's on my other bookshelf. My arms are 84 feet long. I can't reach it from here. I'm not getting, they are. I've got a little pamphlet from a vicar. I think he's a vicar or a reverend or whatever from Hull. I think I've forgotten his name. It's an excellent little book. I got it last year. And it's talking about the Tower of Babel and about why God, according to the narrative, got so hacked off. And one of the reasons was the arrogance of these people in saying, we will, how did he phrase it? I'll try and dig it up at some point. I'm not going to be able to do it for this show. He's talking about the fact that they said, we will build a tower so high it will reach to heaven. Then we can talk to God, but whenever we need to, we can call him down and he can come and see us when we want to see him. And the way he phrases it, God's response basically is, I'm in charge, you're not. End of. Yeah. That's it. You don't come at my beck. I don't come at your beck and call. You're going to do exactly how I've designed this thing. And that's why they were smashed. So it's this condition. It seems to spring up in certain types of individuals. Maybe they are of a completely different spiritual background. You know, they're creatures from a different dimension. They're certainly from a darker one that most of us are at all interested in, who basically will not bend the knee to God. But isn't this the story you were mentioning, the Nephilim earlier? And isn't this correct, the sort of crux of it? You know, you're not in charge. We are. I don't think so. And it's these two factions that have been at war down here for thousands of years. You know,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's all covered, like I said, in the secret Masonic victory of World War II, which the title says, you know, the victory of World War II, which it was. But they also go into, you know, the details of the Spanish Revolution, you know, the French Revolution. Even remember that there was a film which got banned, and it's the director or the maker of the film had only just made a trailer, and they stopped him from making the film and wiped out all of his family. They say it was a suicide, you know, of killing. He killed his
Rick
family,
Mayall.
Which is suicide. No, it wasn't Rick Mayall. No.
Well,
you know, I've done a documentary and I can't remember his name now, but that film never got released, and he was showing what the government had become. So that was in the documentary. The Mexican, the Spanish, the Russian.
Which one's that one in, Dennis? Which one is that? The Secret Masonic Victory is that one in?
Secret Masonic Victory. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he got his family wiped out. And he actually left a clue in the trailer where it shows right at the end of the guillotine and a guy with a mask on, but in an apron, a Masonic apron.
Right.
David, he's got, you know, I just can't remember his second name.
What nationality was he then? Do you know?
He was American.
Right.
Yeah, he's American.
Don't worry.
I'll probably find it before it show ends.
David. Is that relatively recently then, that one? That's quite recent.
Yeah, it's maybe 5-6 years ago. Maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But yes, his whole family, his wife was killed, his daughter was killed, his dog was killed, and he's supposed to commit suicide.
Maybe they play for such high stakes because the consequences for them, which I think they are not going to be able to avoid, are exactly what they deserve for what they've been doing down here.
If there's any payback, any karma, they've certainly got a fair whack coming. I've just got it up there, this episode.
Right.
Grey State was the film.
Grey State, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Now, that rings a bell. That is relatively
David recent. David Crowley.
All right. Was the unfortunate film, right? Surname, I suppose, but there we go.
Well, yeah. But he only managed to get the trailer out, and yeah, that was enough for him, I believe anyway, for him to be killed.
Grey State. And is it available anyway? It never got released, is that right?
Never got supposedly released, no. But like I say, I think it's part 17 where I cover that particular episode. It's fascinating yet sad, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's the epitaph for the 20th century. I don't know.
Just briefly, I'll just run through. German Revolution, Ukraine Genocide.
Yeah.
You know, the Spanish, the Mexican, Luciferian doctrines, all this kind of thing. The British Empire, we talk about Spanish Armada and John Dee.
Yeah.
It really shocked me. I mean, it's after the first two documentaries, it takes a lot to shock me. But the third documentary shocked me even more.
Yes, I guess it's the consistent, hideous intent of these people, if they are people or whatever they are, to continually ruin what without them would work an awful lot better. I mean, I never think we would be without problems, but I tend to feel that the problems that we have would be more rapidly identifiable by us and more easily resolved, only to be replaced by another set. I do think that. I think that struggle is an inherent part, really, of being alive. But then that could be just me being brainwashed my entire life saying that. Maybe it's nonsense what I've just said, but from the perspective that I've got, you know, and having lived whatever I've lived up to this point, that's the way it tends to look to me. I mean, it's if we look at what they're seeking to do with the whole of this Russian thing, it is like watching a sort of carry-on movie, albeit with people getting killed, in the sense that there's nothing, it's not real. When that, you know, we mentioned it here before, when that British general came out a year ago and said, we've got to get geared up and we need to bring back national, whatever it is, your service, because we might be fighting the Russians in 20 years. Who does he mean by we? You're not going to be doing it. Your mates won't be doing it, will you? What are you talking about? You know, so terribly sorry, we've destroyed your nation. We're doing everything we can to remove all the cultural pillars of your nation, which define you as a people and give meaning and give a great part of meaning to your life. We're doing that. We're allowing people in and calling them migrants, but basically they're a proxy army that we're going to use indirectly to threaten you if you step out of line. We're shutting down free speech. You can't think certain things. The judiciary will be run by imbeciles who will make intentionally stupid decisions that are not based on justice, but are based on demoralizing you even further. Oh, and by the way, would you mind fighting for us to protect all this? Hello? I mean, what's going on?
Well, if you look at Britain today, and people can't understand, but you look at the two sides, Israel with the support of the Zionists,
mm-hmm,
and the Palestinians, believe it or not, have the support of the communists. Now, you know, I don't agree with one country bombing women and children for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
But I don't support communism neither. So you've got this left-right, which Freemasonry, I mean, obviously Israel is a Masonic state, yes. Born by the Rothschilds. Communism is born out of Freemasonry from the American bankers. Mm-hmm. So you've got the two conflicting sides, but with the same agenda.
Yeah. It's that thing where the change. Best way to deal with the opposition is to lead it. And exactly. And they've been doing that for an awful long time, haven't they? They really have been doing that for a long time. Except, you know, and I've had people pitch this one at me. They say, oh, yeah, Hitler was a controlled agent as well. And No.
There's a big difference with
there is a difference.
Hitler and any other historical figure.
There is.
I can't think of any other historical figure who has fought Freemasonry.
No, maybe not. Yeah, maybe not. Napoleon. I mean, I don't know about Napoleon. He had there were parallels, but Napoleon was apparently a Mason because he got his hand in his pocket in one picture. I don't know.
Well,
but it was a similar sort of thing, or was he just a device used to usher in English. Socialism, you know, the Republic and all that kind of stuff? Was that what was
behind it? Well, exactly. I mean, you know, he was part of that revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, France had an enemy in England. Well, you got French Freemasonry, you've got English Freemasonry. So there's another, you know, split. But, you know, when you look at Britain today, like people, you know, you're either left or you're right. You either support Palestinians and stand with the communists, mm-hmm. or you're a British nationalist and mm-hmm. you stand with the Zionists.
Is that it? Is that my only choice, Dennis? Is that all I've got on the box?
That is it. That is it.
Ooh, I don't want to be a communist, but I don't want to be a Zionist. Oh, it's very difficult.
We get these minority parties, which are never going to win anything.
Yeah. No. Monster Raving Loony Party is not looking like such a bad option now, is it? In the end, it was a joke, but it's the sort of joke that most of us wouldn't mind too much.
Probably the most sensible ones of all.
Yeah. Screaming Lord Such is no longer screaming, I understand, but... yeah, well, the politics... I mean, I did hear... Who was it talking about this? I think I heard this from Mark Collett on one of his broadcasts. A good thought, I think, was to not vote, but was to spoil the ballot, because supposedly they have to... I'm not taking issue with what he said. I understand that they're supposed to count those spoiled ballots and report them. I've never spoiled a ballot before, so I was thinking that... I don't know when we're... Are we going to have one at some point soon? Not that I'm paying too much attention, but if we are, I suppose I'd have to ask the officers in the booth, how do I spoil my ballot? Because I really want to spoil it a lot, you know.
I imagine there's several ways. Can I just mention Cat? Catty 7.
Catty 7. In the chat.
I will rewatch Dennis's documentary about Adolf this weekend. Sure, it's a long Easter weekend. Oh, thank you, Catty 7. That's I'd like to hope you enjoy it, but you know what I mean.
Yes. You know, I might too. Oh, actually, I can't. My copy's out. But I'll find it on... I think, actually, the full version is on Rumble somewhere. I came across it the other day. So most of the comments were, this won't last long, but it's been up there for about a year. So they're all expecting it to get taken down. But I think it was the full 6.5 hours. I know you don't want to... shouldn't be telling people that. You should be going off and buying it. And if not, find some way to support Dennis and Money Tree Publishing. Yeah, but it is...
I think it's
these things are out there. People. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you to Cathy for mentioning that.
Yes, absolutely. It's actually about 5 or 6 years since I last watched it. I probably need to give it another once-over, I think. Maybe that's everybody's Easter weekend viewing then. Maybe we're setting the agenda. If you haven't got a copy, get one ordered now. It might be here by...
Well, that's a thought, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what? It's quite an interesting thought. Maybe we should organise a time once a year is the greatest story never told viewing slot. Wherever you are in the world, you got to watch it that day and then see what happens the day afterwards. How about that?
Interesting.
That'd be a good promo, wouldn't it? Everybody get a copy and we, you know, you'd have to pick an appropriate day. When's his birthday? April the what?
30th, is it?
That gives us less than 1 month. But, it, you know, I don't know. But it could be a thing. Yeah. Mass viewing. Get yourself a copy and watch it. And that's what we need to do. Yeah, maybe it could be a thing. And then we do a show the day afterwards. I'm going to do a radio show for 6 hours. You'll have to be on it for 6 hours, same length as the video. And
can I just send greetings back to Cathy? Apparently, she's greetings from Germany.
Yes.
Your documentary fills in knowledge I was missing. Not a problem. And greetings back to you and all those awake in Germany. Unfortunately, I know there's a problem over there with the laws and things, but greetings to Germany nonetheless.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this show's turning into a German-themed show. It wasn't by... I don't mean this particular one. I mean, repeatedly. I had Thomas on the other week. He was from Germany. And we were discussing more esoteric things back then, but I know his knowledge of this period of history is considerable. We just chose not to talk about it for the last couple of shows, but it follows me around, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does. It's you're embossed with it permanently. It's on your forehead, Dennis, really.
That's my case.
It's not a bad thing, though. Most people don't have anything embossed on their forehead. They have nothing, if you know what I mean. I'm just being silly, but it's a great thing.
Apparently, I have good taste in music as well. Oh, that's nice to know.
Oh, stop that. Is someone trying to butter you up? What are they talking about? No. Were you here the other week when he put George McRae on? You wouldn't be saying that after that. I still can't get over that. It's amazing. No, I love it. I actually loved it. I've told the tale about you coming on and doing that to so many other people. I said, Dennis, you know, he makes these videos about this, and then he turns up with George McRae in his back pocket. It was outrageous. It was very funny, actually. I liked that. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Adolf Hitler's birthday, April the 20th.
Okay. April the 20th.
So it's 10 days less than what you thought you had.
Oh, well, it's me now, is it? Listen, it's all you listeners out there, right? All of you. Somebody get it organised. We're too busy. I've got to go to the toilet and things, and I've got to go shopping and stuff like that. But if someone's got some spare time, let's do it. We need... what day is April the 20th? Let's just get carried away.
Get the calendar out.
It's a bit like, hey, don't worry about it. We can put on the show right here. It's like one of these Hollywood things. Let me have a look. It's a Saturday. Hey, at least it's the beginning of the weekend, so it could be the greatest story never told weekend viewing all over the place. Maybe we see what we could do. I don't know. Need a website.
Some people have watched the old 6 hours all in one go.
Have they?
I know that for a fact. Oh, yeah, I know that for a fact.
Yeah. I think I watched it in sort of 3 2-hour chunks when I went through it because I wanted to digest it after each little bit. I'd gone through each, you know, 8 or 9 episodes or something like that. Yeah.
I mean, they're long watches, but, I mean, apparently some people are so engrossed. And I think the music has a big part to play in that, where you do kind of get sucked in. Because the music I used wasn't traditional German war music. It was more up-to-date, it was more rock than anything, but it wasn't the really crazy rock.
Yeah.
And it fitted perfectly in the... tank fights and then now the soft music for the for the sentimental bits, the quiet bits,
yeah.
And it really sucks you in.
It does. Yeah, you did a brilliant job with that. The comment here from Bobby Fisher. Hi, Bobby. Hope the chess is going okay. Enoch made his speech on Hitler's birthday, so that would have been April the 20th. When 68 was that? Was that 1968?
Oh,
I wasn't alive then, were you? Enoch.
Well,
you're a lot younger than us lot, than people like me.
Well, again, you see, he's not going to get anywhere. I mean, he just kicked him out of the party, didn't they? As much as what he said, he was lambasted by the press.
It's that what we would... It's not really a soft power, is it? It's an interconnected power between the press, the political class, the banking class, absolutely, the judiciary... and probably the heads of universities, those five branches that are all part of the... They all come out of these same clubs, probably from Oxford and Cambridge, you know, in great part. I mean, because as we've mentioned, I think we talked about this before, you know, the whole of the education system is in fact a sort of, let's identify the really bright guys and gals when they're young, get them over to our side, because we don't want all their intellectual resources being put at the disposal of normal people. They're for us. We're going to use them.
Exactly what they do. Can I just say this? I was just looking at the chat again. Eric von Essex.
Yeah.
If only my late father, who was in World War II, could have seen Dennis's fantastic documentary, he knew the truth, though... before but he died in 2010 before the documentary came out.
Yeah.
Obviously, he would have fought for England, but now, you know, but always knew the truth, which is very similar to John Emery, who left England to go fight for the Germans, as did other English nationalists. They fought against communism.
I know. Only by becoming familiar with all the material that you put in the film and these other attendant pieces of information that we're talking about, can anybody have any idea of what was really taking place during that period? Up until that point, you're in Hollywood's version, aren't you? Or exactly. London's version. That's the version that you're in. And it's jolly exciting, you know. It's got lots of action scenes and the good guys win in the end, according to this story, and blah, blah, blah. But then someone like you turns up and goes, excuse me, I think we need to have a look over here. What do you think? You
know, I had an argument once with a guy on YouTube.
Yeah.
When the documentary came out. And it kind of broke the spell. What had been cast all over the world, really, since 1945. And we were arguing backwards and forwards. And I said, look, at the end of the day, you've got your £100 million blockbusters, what have constantly came out over the years, you know, condemning Germany. And my little old documentary comes out and shakes up everybody.
Yes.
Which he wasn't too pleased about. But it actually did shake up the internet. And I'm not just saying that from a bragging point of view. It's an actual fact.
No, it did. I remember it at the time. I remember all those reviews, completely. Many of the ones that which I read on IMDb at the time that you're talking about, and the fact that it was a top-rated
Facebook,
it was a top-rated history documentary for X number of years. I can't remember how many, but it was more than one, probably more than two or three, until they got cross about it and decided that people can't see this thing anymore. But yeah, but I think part of it as well, just going back to that same point, is that we all need to have our thinking disrupted because much of it is based on false information. So you have to be a person that says to yourself, I'm probably wrong. I'm open to the fact that I've probably been mistaught stuff and I'm willing to take a look. And if you've got that attitude, nothing can be hidden from you. But if you're going around generally with a thing like, no, I went to university and I learned all this stuff from history and this is correct. You see, I know all this stuff and this is accurate. You're kind of doomed, really. And those are the people that will react very badly to an alternative view. Let's just put it like that. I don't think it's just an alternative view. I think it's the more thorough view and it's far closer to it because it is so distasteful and so distressing. This kind of sends a signal back to you that it actually is the truth. It could not be. What's the point of it?
I'm going to slay you now.
Are you? Go on, slay.
Yeah, somebody in the chat has just recommended it should be a national holiday in my name.
I don't know. I quite like that. What would you call it? Wise Day?
Well, I quite like that myself.
Why instead of calling it Wednesday, why do we turn it to Wise Day? So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wise Day, Thursday, Friday, and every once a week, Dennis, people can be reminded of. I don't mind. You can have it. Do you want a statue? If we get a statue of you, we can use your statue to replace all the ones of Churchill. They need boiling down and turning into toilets, urinals. Really, I think is the only fit use for those things.
It says here, a century from now, biographies will be written about Dennis, and there'll be a national holiday in his name. Which I thank him very much. Whether that happens remains to be seen.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that is the power of the documentary. As much as, I mean, you know, it's my documentary, that is the power. It was the only one, really. Europa came out shortly after, which had a powerful effect. Mm-hmm. But that was the one, you know, the greatest story was the one which turned everybody's world upside down.
It was, which you can get from moneytreepublishing.com, everybody.
Both documentaries, yeah.
Yeah.
Europa as well.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Money Tree are carrying that as well right now, aren't they? Yeah, so that's cool. Yeah. I've had people come up to go, this is really awful. I'm going, I know. I know. I mean, I don't shout at them, but I go, yes, it is. But I'm glad, you know, I'm very glad when people come up and say, I've watched this. Fantastic. Well done. Whether they agree with it or not, or think it's good or not, is not the point. The fact that they've exposed themselves to it is the start, because you never know how long it takes for ideas to percolate through any given brain and sort of start landing, you know, more major blows in terms of understanding what's taking place. So it's
Can I just ask people in the chat if they've seen Communism by the Back Door or Secret Masonic Victory and what they thought of it, if that's possible?
Yeah, you just...
Because like I said earlier, you know, we do call it the Trilogy of Truth, and although it was the big one, you know, the other two documentaries are pretty powerful as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you know from figures that the most people, you know, so of 100% of people that watch the first one, The Greatest Story Never Told, are you aware of how many go on to watch the others afterwards? I don't know how you would be, to be quite honest. Yeah, I have no idea how you would be.
Judging off comments, you know, you do get a feel that, obviously, after the first documentary, people were looking forward to the second one and the third.
Yep.
But one comment, what I do remember, is one guy who really enjoyed the first documentary. When he watched the second, he couldn't get his head round when I touched on the music industry in Hollywood and how satanic it was. He just couldn't get his head around it. Mm-hmm. And now you look around today and you see the things, what's been going on. Even P. Diddy's house has been raided. He's been done for sex trafficking. The music industry is a dark, dark place, as is Hollywood. Run by Freemasonry again, with rituals, you know, satanic rituals, which this guy, like I said, he couldn't get his head around. But I think people who see that documentary today will realise exactly where I'm coming from.
It's wherever crowds...
Crowley's the man that's caused it all, isn't it? Sorry.
Oh, I guess he's a key part of it, yeah. Absolutely.
He's a key part of it, OTO.
Yeah, he seems to be in a line going back to John Dee, although I still don't know enough about John Dee. I mean, it was fascinating when we were talking about the multiple armadas. I've seen that coming up everywhere, actually. I don't know if you were the first person to introduce it into the space. I sensed that you were.
I was.
Because I've seen other people picking up on it now, and good on them. They should. It needs amplifying. So that's the whole purpose of these things. It's wonderful. But, I mean, it's like wherever there's crowds, in churches and then in rock concerts and at sports stadiums, the creating these huge, I suppose you would call them demonic bread and circuses events now, they're getting worse and worse. Oft they introduce these iconography, these actions, these behaviors, these perversions into the space to effectively continue the demoralization and ruination of our people. So that, you know, lowering the standard of thought, lowering the frequency of thought. People aren't talking enough about beautiful buildings because they're surrounded by so many hideous garbage buildings, as I bang on about here regularly and will continue to do so. Mm. So that they are mass sort of ritual events. They certainly look that way. I mean, I know when that claim first came out, I was going, I think that's a bit of a stretch. But the more you look at it...
Well, that's it. People can't get their head around it. That's the thing, that people can be so evil. And Crowley was evil. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yes, he was. Yeah, he was evil. Yeah, he died not a million miles from where. And what was he? Tunneled out by syphilis, wasn't he, or something?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, but wherever he is now, I would imagine he's probably worse. If there is a thing called cosmic justice or whatever it's called, obviously none of us know, but we operate towards a standard, don't we? Do you think it's time for a noisy song, Dennis? What do you think?
Well, there's a story to this one, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, what it was, I went to see, for those people listening there, the actual track is a Deep Purple track, you know, the rock band Deep Purple. And I went to see him live with a friend.
Yeah.
And my friend actually had an hearing aid.
Right.
He was suffering from a loss of hearing.
Yes.
Anyway, we went to the concert. And on the way back, I had no car in them days. I had to catch a bus. So we caught the bus back. And I'll never forget, as we got on the bus, my friend turned to me and he said, "Boy, that were fucking loud."
Did he really say that? He did. What year was that, Dennis? What year was that?
Oh, 70s. 70s. Okay. 70s. Yeah.
So, Okay, we're going to play this in a second. I'm just going to give a shout out. The last song, I got a report back from Paul that it was overdriving everything. So we still got to work a little bit on the music mixing stuff. I'm not a master of this, so we were kind of overdriving. I'm turning the volume down a little bit on this to make sure we kind of don't do that again. So if I turn it down too low, you're going to have to turn it up, okay? It's a bizarre sort of thing. When you're in the radio thing, you're supposed to get this right. But guess what? Can't do that today, necessarily. Okay, so here's a four-minute break with one of Dennis's headbanging songs. Here we go.
There once was a woman, a strange kind of woman, the kind that gets written down in history. Her name was Nancy, her face was nothing fancy. She left the trail of happiness and misery. I loved her, everybody loved her. She loved everyone and gave a good return. I tried to take her, I even tried to break her. She said, I ain't for taking, won't you ever learn? I want you, I need you, I gotta be near you. I spent my money as I took my turn. I want you, I need you, I gotta be near you. Ooh.
And welcome back to the last quarter of an hour of the show. Hi,
great
Dennis.
Track.
Yeah?
Great track. Even better, louder.
Did you turn it up louder? I turned it down, actually. I had to turn it down at this end.
That's a technicality.
You turned it up, did you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the very first rock track I ever heard that registered in my head was Black Knight by Deep Purple, I think it was.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
What year would that be? 72, 71?
Yeah, mid-70s. I never did like Ozzy Osbourne. He was too satanic for me.
He was a bit satanic. All those dark satanic mills just, from Birmingham. Actually, that's from up north, really. Just but a bit, still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, he married a witch.
Well, he did marry a witch, yeah. There is that, of course. Yeah. That does stand against him. Well, he's still alive. Yeah. You know that apparently there's a gene or something that enables you to sort of absorb or deal with alcohol, and I actually don't have that at all. It literally wreaks havoc with me. I don't cope with it at all well. So I think he's got mine and everybody else's, or did have. I mean, the fact that he was still alive was just... I don't know how you can do that. But maybe it's a different type of energy that goes into your body and it just copes with all this stuff. I mean, there's probably a reason why they call them spirits, isn't there? Don't they kind of push your spirit out of your body? Isn't that what's really going on? There's something taking place with that chemical, the alcohol stuff.
Yeah. Somebody just said here, I have seen all of Dennis's documentaries. They are fantastic. Communism by the back door says it all. Very kind.
It does.
Thank you.
It does.
Yeah, and of course, if they do happen to buy from the website, they are shipped out immediately if people are in a rush to see them at all. They do get seen straight away.
Yeah.
Somebody says, Richard Blackmore, a stunning riff, which I totally agree. What a guitarist. And another thing I noticed, in that same concert, which when I went with me... my deaf friend, who was more deaf at the end of the concert than he was before.
I was going to ask that. That was loud. It was so loud I can't hear anything ever again. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I noticed the power of being in a group, because I've never seen as many groupies in my life on that front row. My God.
Yeah, it was a powerful thing. Well, everybody back then, if you wanted to be in a band, everybody did, really, I think.
Yeah, they switched to DJs, didn't it, later on for some...
Oh, I'm afraid I didn't follow music into that arena. That was just silly. I still don't. I just think it's daft. If you can't actually play something with your fingers and get it wrong live, I'm not coming. But it's getting it wrong that's actually part of the magic of it. It's not that you're targeting them getting it wrong, but it's going to go wrong. If you play music live, there's going to be bits where you're just going to lose it a bit. And it's how the band copes to pull a song back together again. It's fascinating. I loved all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I loved it. So, yeah. But
Well, I certainly did. Well, like I said, I love me Elvis, but I also love me rock, and I also love me Rocky Babies.
Yeah, look, there's nothing wrong with having diversified. See what I did there?
So how can a guy with such...
eclectic taste.
Extreme musical taste.
Yes.
Do the three documentaries proclaiming the trilogy of truth? It's not possible. It must have been divine intervention, I think.
I don't know. I think your backstory with regards to the information and the energy or the intensity of these communications you receive from your uncles with regards to that conflict must have been major. Uncles are massively important when you grow up. They were to me. I had several. And they were they were more interesting than your dad, because they were rougher than your dad and they didn't have to pay. They were sort of like a bloke, you know, whereas your dad, of course, is your dad and you respected your dad and dealt with it, but they're different. Well, so the naughty uncle was always part of it. So you had
fortunate.
You know?
I was fortunate because not many people knew the allies of the Germans down in the Balkans. Yeah. If I'd have gone to school with a German name, I would have had, probably a fight every day. But because nobody actually knew about the Balkans War,
yes,
during World War II,
yeah,
I kind of got a pass on that, which I was quite grateful for.
It's interesting. We had my school in the 70s. There was a guy there my age, obviously my year, who was German, and his father was a prisoner of war and had stayed on in England afterwards, and he was great. I think he moved to Australia. I haven't spoken to him in a long time.
Moved to Australia, yeah.
Yeah, he was in Yorkshire, obviously, up until a certain age, and I remember bumping into him a few years later, about 1984 or 85, something after we'd been out of school for about years or something. And he hadn't yet gone to Australia. But the interesting turnaround was that whilst at school, he was very sort of artistic in a literary convention. He would write things. In fact, he wrote a play, a whole play, which was like a sort of variant of Rings of the Nibelung and all that kind of, it was a sort of thing. And I thought, oh, obviously you're a theatrical impresario, you're a playwright. And he'd gone into accountancy or something, and I understand it has sparkled and done really well, but I've not spoken to him for nigh on 40 years now, so let's have a conversation with him. Yeah, I sometimes think, I think of these people, I think, right, we've got the internet, should be a way to make connections. And of course it's kind of weird, because you'd speak to people and like 40 years just disappears bang after the first couple of sentences. It just evaporates. Which is fascinating, really, in a strange, silly sort of way. Hey, I tell you what, I had, we still got a few minutes left. You know, I was telling you a clip about Ulez that I had. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I got to play you this clip. Everybody, you're about to learn something about bats. Seriously, this is quite epic. I think it is, when I heard this a little bit earlier today. Get your logos around this.
London's Blade Runners. Well, this is nothing short of pure and utter genius. What the anti-ULEZ protesters are doing now is installing bat boxes on top and over the broken ULEZ cameras. Because once they're up there, under UK law, they can't be removed. Because all bat species, their breeding sites and resting areas are all fully protected by law. UK legislation actually dictates, and I'm going to read this so I don't get it wrong. Legislation dictates that any structures or places which bats use for shelter or protection are protected from damage or destruction, whether occupied or not. Now, I'm sure you'll agree with me, and I'm sure everybody will. This is just bloody genius. Absolutely genius. Whoever came up with this deserves a well done sticker. It's just outstanding. I mean, what's your views? I mean, I don't live in London, I live up in the Manchester area, but that ULEZ crap is just absolutely out of order. Sadiq Khan, all he wants to do is rip everybody off. Even those farmers that are down there today protesting, some of them who work just outside London, they're getting hit by that surcharge, that ULEZ charge, that £12.50 charge every single day because their fields on the outskirts of London. It's just absolutely shocking. This is just pure and utter. It's outstanding.
Hey, so bats, Dennis. Bats.
Yeah, them cameras are the biggest rip-off going, aren't they?
Well, they've been saved by the bats. The Batmen have turned up. And so, amazing. So UK law says you can't disturb a bat sanctuary. What do bats live in? I always thought it was a cave, but then I've been watching too many Batmen. Yeah. What's it called? Well, yeah. So maybe they're sort of modified caves. I mean, that came from a video, so there was a picture of it, but they've put these big wooden structures, like a housing box, over the top of the ULEZ camera, and it's a bat sanctuary. That's it. Can't touch it. It is good.
Amazing.
It's good. See, so I put that in just to let you know that we're not done yet. It may be that we form a union with the bats and we restore the nation via batology or something like that, you know, and become the Batmen, but not in the way that, you know, blah, 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 blah. But that's tremendous stuff.
I'm more than that myself, but...
I do too. I am being slightly flippant and trite about the whole thing. But I'll take anything these days. And so the idea that some guys actually come up with that and go, this is what we do, you know, and use their own rules against them. Fantastic stuff. It is. It's very British, yeah, I think. It's quite witty, actually. Yeah.
It's amazing how many billions that they are making from their ULEZ cameras, even the ones that are staying up. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there are paths to be pursued as quickly as we possibly can, and everybody needs to pursue their own particular one to see if we can keep hitting little, well, I don't know, bat sanctuary moments. Something a bit bigger than that would help, you know. Maybe I could turn my house into a bat sanctuary and then tax collectors can't come in it. I say, oh, you can't come in here. I keep bats, you know, they're protected species. Maybe we all start keeping bats. Yeah, I don't know.
You before me.
Yeah, Britain goes bats, says Sun, you know.
I wonder if any of them politicians have watched my documentary.
I don't know. I didn't realize they had the attention span long enough to watch things more than 3 or 4 minutes. Actually, Dennis, I thought that was.
You know, I mean, it did cause a lot of attention. I'm pretty sure one or two would have had a sneak look.
Why don't we? Maybe we should invite them all to a special political screen.
Viewing.
Yeah, all 600 of you. Are canapés.
The Rothschilds as well.
Yeah, canapés. I'll serve champagne. I'll put on a, you know, tuxedo and all that kind of stuff and go around and serve canapés and glasses of baby sham and pints of mild for the men. Yeah. Turn up, roll up. It's a, you know, proper premiere, all that kind of stuff. And you'll have a wonderful time out.
Keir Starmer front seat. I can just imagine Keir Starmer to the opening tune of Unchained Melody.
Yeah. And Keir, what did you think about it? Oh, no comment.
As it was bounding over the World War I trenches.
Yes.
You never know.
No, you never know. You don't know. Well, maybe some of them have, but, you know, the thing that I think... there's that obvious point. You mentioned about Enoch, you know, making a statement and it came to nothing because the bulk of them are in that space already gagged and trussed up and, you know, part of the process. And they're not going to come with you no matter what. They can't because it's the ruination of them utterly if they did. So what happened? So, you know, any good man or group of men and women or whatever you want to call them, that tries to go into that arena to change it internally, it's unlikely to succeed because it's going to be the other way around. They find ways to corrupt people. You know,
I'll ask you another question. Do you think Enoch was a Freemason?
Probably. Wouldn't surprise me if he was. But
he joined the Ulster MPs, didn't he? He got kicked out of the Tory party and joined the Orange Men over in Ulster.
Yeah.
So, the odds are he was probably a Freemason again.
Probably.
So they've got holes on both sides.
I don't know what to do to stop it, Dennis. Is there a kind of a lozenge we could give them all that just make them forget about it? Or, you know, what do we have to do? Is there anything that could be done? It's not. It's a virus that replicates down through the line, doesn't it? It is. It is. It's a tricky one to actually deal with. By the way, we're nearly at the end of the show. Look at that. It absolutely flew by. We only got 3 minutes left. That's absolutely preposterous. I can't believe it.
I see in the chat there's one or two about the documentary while we're talking, which is interesting.
Hey, fantastic. You know what? Promotion and advertising works, Dennis. This is really good. No, brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant that they've done that. Yeah. Enoch was a soil slammer. I don't know what that means. Is that vulgar? I don't know what that means.
Well, it probably means he's a Freemason.
Ah, right. Okay. Probably was.
Word for it. But, I mean, the Orange Lodges out there, the Ulster MPs, are well known, aren't they? It's no great secret.
Yeah. Are we supposed to join it and change it from within? Is that what you're supposed to do? Is that one of the tactics?
Well, I think Bill Cooper, who didn't realise just what Adolf Hitler was doing with Freemasonry, suggested that Freemasonry had to be destroyed. That was Bill Cooper, which is exactly what Adolf Hitler was doing. But because there was no internet in them days, it's hard to find out what was going on in the war, only what the BBC and CNN were telling everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the first thing is for Freemasonry to be sorted out and then take it from there.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, there we go. We got the fade-out music, Dennis. I think I'd just say, really, with the Masonry stuff, I reckon it's pretty much what a part of it is, that the vast majority of people are innocently part of something bad. And it's just like all these other structures... You know, most of the people that work in banking don't understand the true nature of it and are just honourable, decent people doing the best they can with the information and knowledge they've got at the time. It's just unfortunate that the purposes of some of these organisations are lethal to the way of life that we would like to have anyway.
So, website just before we go?
MoneyTreePublishing.com. Get your eyeballs over to moneytreepublishing.com to see all of Dennis's videos and a lot of other great books and other stuff that's over there. We're winding up. We'll be back again. We've got 30 seconds. We're back again same time next week. Actually, in the US, we're at 3 p.m. next week, back to our normal time because of the clocks taking. There will be an after show here on Rumble, so head on over to Rumble if you want to chat with some of the other people. I don't know how long it'll last. It might be 10 minutes. It might be 6 hours. Who can say? But wonderful. Dennis, brilliant for having you this week. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah.
Have a good Easter.
Have a good Easter, everyone. Bye for now.